From Tribune Tower, WGN Radio presents A Conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything within the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and this is your Sunday Spin for the last Sunday in May. This is our weekly look into the politics and the policies that shape our world. So grab a cup of coffee and the Sunday paper, and we'll do our best to help you get the new week off to a good start. Well, we've taken the Sunday Spin on the road for the very first time. We're broadcasting from the very comfortable Illinois State Capitol Basement Bureau of WUIS-FM, the Illinois public radio station in Springfield. And Dave and Dolly, I hope everything is okay there up in the big city while I'm away.
We're just fine. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good
morning,
Rick. Reporter in Springfield.
Pardon me?
Our on-the-spot reporter in Springfield.
Indeed, and we may make some news today. I'll run down the guest list in a little bit. But I have to tell you, I know there's wind chills in the 30s up there this morning in Chicago.
We actually do have a wind chill index of 34.
Well,
it is the last day in May, and we're reporting on a wind chill index. I've never done that before.
Oh, yes, you have. Think about it. You've just put it out of your memory, that's all.
Yeah, that's right.
But it now,
as I did the snow on Memorial Day weekend.
Yes, I remember the sleet too.
Mm-hmm.
But so we're about, I'd say, maybe 10 degrees warmer down here in Springfield. But I will tell you, you can still see your breath outside here, outside the state capitol. And I think that's actually a result of all the pent up hot air in this building. You know, when it exhausts out, and yes, that's, and believe me, there's been plenty of hot air in this building the past week. But I do want to thank everyone from WUIS-FM and many of my longtime friends here at the station for setting us up here. As you know, we're broadcasting. This is the final scheduled day of the legislature's spring session, and I'd encourage anybody out there, give my friends at WUIS a little help. Google them on their website. Give them a financial hand in covering state government news throughout Illinois. It's all very important. And but before we really go into the show, I got to tell you, did you guys watch the Hawks game?
I went to bed early, but I went to bed right after the second goal was scored.
See,
and I was
optimistic. That's bad karma, Dave. That's bad karma.
It was bad karma, yes, but it was also, I was also thinking positively. The fact that this bodes well for a victory, and it did. As I mentioned to you on the phone a little while ago, about 10:30, I heard fireworks. And I thought, I know why that's happening.
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
The
Hawks, 5-3 victory, Western Conference champions. It was great to see them all assembled at mid-ice there in Anaheim, not touching the Campbell Cup, the conference championship cup. You know the
superstition there?
Absolutely.
No, I don't know it. You guys have to tell me.
Well, so each
and the rest of the city that doesn't know.
Well, Dolly, each conference winner, the Eastern Conference champion, that's Tampa Bay, who the Hawks will play now in the finals, each conference winner gets a trophy, a cup. The Western Conference that the Blackhawks are in, they get the Campbell Cup. I don't remember what the Eastern Conference trophy is because I really don't care. But it's bad luck to touch that cup because the only cup you really want is the Stanley Cup. So they all assemble in the pictures, you know, at center ice with the conference cup, but nobody touches the cup.
Oh, that's why no one was touching it. Okay.
Now, this brings up the question, Rick, you as an avid Blackhawks fan, do you have your little superstitions yourself when you watch it? I've watched the game with you. you carry like a good luck charm or anything like that? You get very passionate about this.
I do. And sometimes it goes from game to game. And there are times, especially during the playoffs, where I won't watch the game. I will listen to John and Troy do it.
Oh, okay. But I'll watch it on TV.
I just will not watch it on TV. Something just, you know, too stressful or whatever.
Or maybe you're a little old school, the way we used to do it. listening to the Hawks.
Sure.
The radio.
Oh, absolutely. The old listening to Lloyd Pettit. I have to tell you, if I haven't said it before, I took French in high school because of Lloyd Pettit, because I was going to grow up and be a hockey announcer. So I could pronounce all the French Canadian names. And you see how well that's done me, right?
Yeah, they sent him to Springfield instead.
Exactly.
By the way, you were looking really sharp this week with all those nice suits you have. We were wearing on TV. We noticed. We noticed the nice suits you were wearing. Very smart.
I was actually going to mention, this is probably the most dressed up I've ever been for this show today, in here with a coat and tie on. And because technically the deadline, such as it is for the session, expires at midnight tonight. But word is they're not going to stick around that long. And there's going to be plenty of unfinished business for their summer vacation. So we'll be talking all about that. But thank goodness for the Blackhawks. My good friend and special co-host for this morning, by the way, since this is a special broadcast, is Amanda Vinicky, the State House Bureau Chief for Illinois Public Radio. And welcome, Amanda, this morning.
Good morning, guys.
And Amanda and I and some friends, we were over at our favorite pizza joint in Springfield, Gabatoni's, watching the Blackhawks win. And I got to tell you, you would think, you know, in Chicago, of course, every TV at every place is tuned into the Blackhawks. Well, remember in Springfield here, we're south of the Cubs-Cardinal line, so it was kind of an effort.
Blues
territory. So it was an effort to kind of try to persuade them to switch one of the TVs over to show the Blackhawks game.
But there are places where Rick has clout, and Gabatoni's is one of them.
And, you know, it was very funny, though, because even I think we were the only ones watching the game. Really.
There was a table where one guy was kind of into it, but right. The rest of his table didn't care. But he came over and kind of joined us at the end.
But yeah, it was. I mean, I'm not very inhibited when it comes to the Blackhawks. So virtually everyone in the restaurant knew when the Blackhawks scored because I was erupting. And everybody's kind of looking up and looking around. And I think I did hear one table of a family saying, somebody must have scored.
We did the little do-do-do-do-do-do by ourselves. It wasn't quite the same Chicago establishment. But we did it.
A great game. I know even some of the Chicago area legislators who are down here for the session, they had little pizza parties and things around town.
Governor Bruce Rauner watched.
Well, apparently, or somebody tweeted under his name.
I sent my interns over. I got an inside source that said, "Hey, we see him at another local bar there to watch the game." And yes, so my interns were there and verified. They asked questions, and he just laughed, didn't answer anything about session. But guess what, guys? He's a Blackhawks fan. Surprise.
Well. But is he a real Blackhawks fan or is he
a
bandwagon
just all he
Blackhawks
said.
Fan?
Exactly.
That's another
that
question.
That is an answer
we'll
to
see.
Which I don't know. But.
That's another question. We'll see if he'll eventually get around to answer. Well, as I said, we've got the Sunday spin. We're on the road, and we've got a great show today. But we're going to take a quick break. This is the Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. Go Blackhawks. Stanley Cup Finals, third time in the past 6 years. Let's go Blackhawks. And, of course, you can hear all the playoff action right here on WGN Radio and WGNRadio.com. Well, I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin, and this is a very special Sunday Spin. It's the final day of the spring legislative session, although it really isn't because it will go into extended overtime. But we're reporting here from Springfield in the Springfield Bureau of WUISFN. And joining me is Amanda Vinicky, the Illinois Public Radio State House Bureau Chief. Coming up on the show today, after the 7:30 news, Tom Cross, the former Republican leader of the Illinois House, joins the show. After Dave brings us the 8 o'clock news, we'll be joined here in Springfield by State Senator Karen McConnell. McConaughey, a Republican from St. Charles, and she'll be discussing the Republican viewpoint on what's going on here at the Capitol. And after the 8:30 news, we'll get the Democratic view from one person who I guess, Amanda, I'd say was uniquely qualified to give it. Illinois House Speaker Michael J. Madigan joins us live from our Springfield studio after 8:30. That's all coming up. But first, it's time for our weekly spin through national politics. You know, last night we learned of the death of Joseph Bo Biden III. Bo Biden, former Attorney General of Delaware and son of Vice President Joe Biden. He died at the age of 46, the White House said in a statement, after a battle with brain cancer. You know, you think of some of the tragedies that have afflicted Joe Biden. You know, this is just another one. And also we learned overnight that Secretary of State John Kerry had to be helicoptered to a Swiss hospital after a bike crash outside of Geneva. And, of course, he's in Geneva for those nuclear talks with Iran's foreign minister. He suffered a likely leg injury but did not lose consciousness, the State Department said. Well, you know, it's been another week in politics and, of course, another week of presidential candidacy announcements. Yesterday morning, former Maryland governor and Baltimore mayor Martin O'Malley, well, he's joined the Democratic field.
The story of our country's best days is not found in a history book because this generation of Americans is about to write it. And that is why today, to you and to all who can hear my voice, I declare that I am a candidate for President of the United States, and I am running for you. May God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America. Thank you.
So that's former Baltimore mayor and former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley joining the field. Earlier in the past week, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders made official his bid for the Democratic nomination, coming from the left of Hillary Clinton.
Today,
here is Bernie Sanders.
Today, with your support and the support of millions of people throughout our country, we begin a political revolution to transform our country economically, politically, socially, and environmentally. Today, we stand here and say loudly and clearly, enough is enough. This great nation and its government belong to all of the people and not to a handful of billionaires.
Now, meanwhile, on the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton was campaigning in the early state of South Carolina. Now, I want you to listen closely here as Mrs. Clinton speaks with a distinctly Southern drawl.
And you're right. I am running to live again at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. But I don't want to be there all by myself. I want Democrats elected from the local to the county to the state to the federal level. Once again, making the case that when Democrats win, Americans win.
Now, on the Republican side, former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum announced his second bid for the GOP presidential nomination. You might remember that Santorum was pronounced the winner of the Iowa caucuses weeks after they occurred because of a counting error. Here's Rick Santorum speaking to ABC's George Stephanopoulos.
Number one, we're going to have some more money. That really helps to be able to run a more national campaign. Obviously, we learned something from the last campaign. You got to do well in Iowa, and if you don't do well in Iowa,
got to do well earlier too.
You got to do well, yeah. You got to win on election night as opposed to 2 weeks later.
And also, jumping into the race last week was former New York Governor George Pataki. Now it's a long shot bid, but here's a snippet from Pataki's campaign announcement video.
We the people, not Washington, are equipped to lead this nation. We the people can make a difference. We the people are what make this nation great.
When we stand together, Americans can accomplish anything.
know, I kind of like to have the royalties for that kind of uplifting music that they play on all these kind of videos.
It's special.
Very special. Now, meanwhile, tonight is the deadline for the expiration of the Patriot Act. And Kentucky Republican Senator and GOP presidential contender Rand Paul, he's vowing to block a reauthorization. Paul isn't winning many friends, though. Last week, he blamed hawkish Republicans for the advance of the Islamic State in an interview on MSNBC's Morning Joe.
ISIS exists and grew stronger because of the hawks in our party who gave arms indiscriminately, and most of those arms were snatched up by ISIS. These hawks also wanted to bomb Assad, which would have made ISIS's job even easier. They created these people. ISIS is all over Libya because these same hawks in my party loved Hillary Clinton's war in Libya. They just wanted more of it. But Libya is a failed state, and it's a disaster. Iraq really is a failed state. We're a vassal state now of Iran. So everything that they've talked about in foreign policy they've been wrong about for 20 years, and yet they have somehow the gall to keep saying and pointing fingers otherwise.
President Obama, seeking passage of a rewritten Patriot Act, had a warning for Republicans like Rand Paul. Here's the president.
These authorities expire on Sunday at midnight, and I don't want us to be in a situation in which, for a certain period of time, those authorities go away, and suddenly we're dark, and heaven forbid, we've got a problem where we could have prevented a terrorist attack or apprehended someone who was engaged in dangerous activity, but we didn't do so simply because of inaction in the Senate. So I've indicated to Leader McConnell and other senators, I expect them to take action and take action swiftly. That's what the American people deserve.
So a Sunday of deadlines, Amanda Vinicky, a deadline here in Springfield, a deadline in Washington for the Patriot Act.
All know politicians are very good at meeting deadlines.
Correct.
They need lessons from We Reporters, I think.
If only they had the discipline of We Reporters. Mm-hmm. That's Amanda Vinicky. I'm Rick Pearson. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN.
This is The Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson. This is your Sunday Spin, a very special Sunday Spin, as we're broadcasting from the luxurious studio of Illinois Public Radio, WUIS-FM, in Springfield, here on what is supposed to be the final scheduled day of the legislature's spring session, which will go hurtling into
a summer session.
I think so. That's Amanda Vinicky, Illinois Public Radio State House Bureau Chief. And, you know, there are a lot of things going on today, and today is the last day for Bob Schieffer on Face the Nation. And in many ways, I think Bob Schieffer has been the face of CBS News. Today's his last show as chair after 24 years. And his retirement means one of the most experienced voices covering journalism in Washington will be leaving the airwaves. Bob is 78. He's a Texan. And he's truly a gentleman in the times that I've had a chance to talk to him. But one thing, he loves his country music. And you know, he actually performs with a band, Amanda. And I wanted to play this little snippet of the time he sang a joke song on how he was approached to do the TV news while selling gas at a Stuckey's. Here's Bob Schieffer.
He said, "Son, that's not what I'm about. I'm a news consultant, a TV scout. We're looking for an anchor man the girls can love. You don't have to know all that much, facts and names and dates and such, 'cause you got a face that reeks sincerity. I wasn't sure I understood, but indoor work sure sounded good, and he said we'd make us some TV history. Gonna be a TV anchorman. Gonna be on the eyewitness team. Hell's up to there, it's a new American dream. So I quit this job that I just took and started practicing my sincere look. They said I had the face of a man with heart. They wrote me some lines and taught me a style, drew a happy face on the script where I should smile, and the key demographics just went right off the chart. I gotta say, they pay me good, a lot better than old Stucky ever would. And now a cute little stage manager gives me all my cues. So pumping gas and selling tractor hats, that's all part of my long-ago past. Now I just sit there and read the news.
That's Bob Schieffer.
Boy, does he read the news.
Yes,
he asks the questions. He does it well.
Well, and good luck, Bob, with your retirement. Right now, we're going to bring things back here to Springfield State Government, Illinois politics. And joining me now on the phone is Tom Cross of Oswego. Tom, of course, is the former Illinois House Republican leader and former Republican candidate for treasurer. Good morning, Tom.
How are you guys doing today?
You remember these kinds of days, don't you?
Oh, my gosh. I remember them. By the way, on Bob.
You try not to.
I try not to. I read where Bob Schieffer tried to retire two or three different times. TBS had thought so much of him, they pleaded with him to stay. And he really was an incredible news guy.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's retiring at 78, and I believe he had told people previously he was going to retire at 70. So that says something about his longevity. Hey, Tom, before we talk about Springfield, I do have to ask you knew Speaker Hastert as well as anybody. I covered him for years down here in Springfield when he was in the legislature and, of course, in Congress. And, you know, this indictment, I think, if there's one word of universal reaction, it's people are just stunned.
I got a call Thursday afternoon, and I was shocked when I was told the news, and I've stayed shocked throughout the last couple of days.
Have you spoken at all with Speaker Hastert?
I have not.
Well,
I have not. So I think the whole... like you said, Rick, I think most people are shocked or stunned and just kind of bewildered by the whole situation. So I am not, and I'm somebody that was in high school at Yorkville High School and been obviously involved politically for a number of years, and it's shocking. It's stunning. I'm still, the other day I said I was speechless, which is not a usual word to describe me, but I have been that way for the last few days.
Well, and of course we'll see how all of this plays out. There seems to be so much more to what's going on than what we know from the indictment and some of the news reports as well. Well, Tom, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on is, you know, not that you're removed from politics, but I mean you're certainly kind of a observer of it as far as what's going on in Springfield. You know, here we are kind of in a very interesting period where you have, of course, divided government with a Democratic legislature, Republican governor. And unlike the past, though, when we've been in these kinds of situations, we still have Bruce Rauner as somewhat of an unknown. And so how the future is charted really seems to be an unknown.
I think you have a couple things that are unique to where we are, where we've been in the past. One, you do have a governor that's, I think you could say, non-traditional. Some like that, some don't like that. It depends on who you're talking to.
Well, and indeed, that's part of why he got elected, I would say.
I think that definitely played into it in a large way. You've got the supermajorities in the House and the Senate that the Democrats control that I think is unique. I think I think you have a governor I would not call it reckless, but I think some will. But I think a governor I don't think he's afraid to do the non-traditional, unconventional things, and where you have this predictability in the past of saying, oh, we're going to have this deadline, you're going to have to do this, or else. I don't know that this governor is as driven or concerned about deadlines. And then I think I don't say that in a critical way. I say that in a supportive way of him wanting to do things differently. And then the last thing, and you guys have talked about this, the amount of money that he has available and this upcoming campaign, assuming we go into set overtime, it looks like we are going to go into overtime as a state. I think that is a potential game changer in a significant way, because legislators, we're in a state, and this is true around the country, the way we do redistricting, at least in Illinois, is very few legislators are in contested area or in contested legislative seats, and they're not used to people going after them in a campaign mode. They've got Democrat seats, Republican seats, and depending on how aggressive the governor gets on individual districts or with this radio, TV, mail, I think that's going to have an impact on legislators because legislators do not like getting attacked.
We're speaking with Tom Cross, the Illinois House Republican leader, and I want to touch more on that whole issue because that's also part of the unknown, that the money and the support from these outside PACs. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. A little alternative Chelsea Dagger there as we celebrate the Hawks Western Conference Championship win last night over the Ducks 5-3, and now their third Stanley Cup final in the past 6 years. Joining me back on the phone is Tom Cross of Oswego, former Illinois House Republican leader. I've got Amanda Vinicky here as we're broadcasting from Springfield at the WUIS-FM studios in the State House. And Tom, we were talking about this factor of Rauner's wealth that he's willing to invest in helping Republicans, the fact that these independent expenditure PACs, all this are out there too, $34 million. And I've got a story in the Tribune today kind of talking about what's going to happen going forward with legislators expected to return to their districts and a TV ads coming at them. Do you think, and again, we're talking about this great unknown because we've never seen anybody that has that kind of firepower, but it's also, you know, it's we're talking about June, and is anybody going to be really up for another round of political ads?
I think that's a fair question. I think it's a question, too, of, you know, who's around. It's vacation time. People are, you know, outside, they're ball games, or no one's who's watching TV. But I will say, I do think, back it up to the point, it's not just Democrats. I think the governor has even said, you know, those of you that aren't on my program on the turnaround agenda, ours or D's, I'm not going to be real patient with that. So he's obviously pretty committed. But, you know, look, you guys know this. When I was in the General Assembly, the leader, if a legislator gets 10 to 15 phone calls or letters about an issue saying they're for or against something, it gets their attention. And
if they're real letters, not the chain letter kind of protest letter stuff.
And they will react and oftentimes overreact. Legislators are very, very concerned about their next election, and people know that. You're right. It's got to be real, but that will impact them. And, you know, I can remember you would know a legislator might be gotten 5 or 6, and they'd say, I got thousands of letters.
Right, of course.
But I think, and that was my point early on, is that there aren't many people that are used to getting bombarded. I mean, they'll get those letters, but you have the letters, but now you throw in some significant radio and some TV and maybe some mail pieces to people that aren't used to it. I think that's the unknown. And are those folks going to run back to the Speaker and the President and say, oh, my gosh, these guys are coming after me. I'm vulnerable. My next election, even though these districts are pretty well drawn to protect the Democrats, and, you know, the Republican seats are good Republican seats. But it'll be interesting, and that's your question, is will it have an impact? And I think it's going to have an impact on local legislators. It's just a matter of, or legislators, it's just a matter of whether the Speaker and the President can calm them down and say, wait a minute, it's a long time to the next election. You've got a good seat. Let's not overreact. And that'll be, I think, one of the questions going out in these caucuses.
Well, I mean, as you noted, it's not just Democrats. It's also Republicans that Governor Rauner says, hey, you got to stick with my program or else. But some of these Republican seats, I mean, he has made an enemy of unions. And a lot of these Republican seats are heavily unionized. So, I mean, couldn't this have perhaps the effect of hurting the Republican Party in the long run if he says, I don't care, stick with my agenda, and make a lot of voters mad in those GOP districts?
Look, I think that it's a fair question, but I also think that to a certain degree, you know, I faced that as the leader. There were a lot of Republicans afraid to get on the issues that were important, that needed to be addressed. And I often thought, and that, this isn't about whether their constituents are important or not important. I think they embellished, I think they use that as an argument oftentimes to not want to be supportive of some reform ideas that needed to be addressed and needed to be passed in order to turn the state around. So I think that it's just, again, it's kind of what legislators, they look for excuses not to do things. And he has, I think, done a good job this session of bringing, of focusing Republicans on the need to reform. I think everybody in the state would agree that we're in a bad shape. We're in bad shape and certain things need to be done. One of the things that struck me is when he did the cuts on Good Friday, I think it was Good Friday, the 23,
yes, it 24. Was.
Oh, it was.
What?
It was definitely Good Friday, yes.
Yeah, it was definitely Good Friday for you guys from your standpoint. But what struck me is I think that certainly the people impacted by those cuts were not happy. But as a whole, I didn't see an uproar around the state from the general public. I think people are willing to give him a lot of leeway and a lot of room to do some very aggressive things because they know it's bad and they're expecting some dramatic change.
Well, I would say that maybe one reason there wasn't general outrage was the fact, one, it did occur on Good Friday over Passover and Easter weekend, and
right.
It took a while for, frankly, you know, these providers to know. They didn't really get notified. Some of them even told me they learned of it on my show on Easter Sunday.
Right. I got emails saying, hey, we've heard that we're cut, but we haven't been notified yet.
No, those particular groups, no argument that they were not happy. I understand that.
But I think some of the constituents that use these groups for services also, I think that was a slow developing thing. And obviously, you know, as we look ahead to the budget and how that shapes out, you know, that's going to be a whole interesting thing as well. But what, I mean, where you've obviously had to deal with Speaker Madigan before. What do you see as an end game here?
It'll be, I think a lot of it, remember Governor Edgar talked about having these pushbacks with the speaker, and the governor talked about when he was governor, post-governor, where he had the bully pulpit as the governor. He was able to kind of override the inside baseball of Springfield and was to appeal to the public. If Governor Rauner has success with his, you know, ad campaigns, his mail pieces, his TV, his radio, and is able to succeed selling his agenda over the next month, who knows? I think you raised the questions about the concerns about whether it would work. But if he's successful like Governor Edgar was, I think that can be a way to see a change. And the speaker's a very, very, very bright guy. He's a great political guy. Then he may react. If he doesn't have success with his approach, then I'm not sure where this ends up.
Well, and does the governor have an automatic advantage because you've got one person versus the legislature, and it's kind of this amorphous thing? Or, you know, does it? And obviously, I think as I got in the story this morning, it's kind of framing up as, you know, Rauner Republicans versus Madigan Democrats.
I think that. Look, it's interesting. You've got this air war, so to speak, versus the greatest chess player in the state and the speaker. And, you know, is there a collision there? But, you know, the speaker's a pragmatic guy. He's very political, and he's very shrewd and smart. But if he sees that the governor is having success with his agenda and he's articulating his agenda right and is able to focus on two or three things that have to happen before he will sign a budget. One of the things that I think gives the governor a lot of credibility, unlike a lot of Republicans who play very coy about taxes, the governor has said, look, I'm ready to go down this road of revenue. I'll do that. I know we need to do it, but you've got to do some things for me reform-wise that we all believe have to happen. And I think that's refreshing. And I think that gives him a lot of credibility to the general public.
Tom Cross of Oswego, former Illinois House Republican leader. Thank you very much for joining us this morning on the Sunday Spin.
Well, good luck in Springfield today and the next 60, 90, 120 days.
if not longer. Thanks,
365.
Tom.
365.
Bye-bye. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. Okay. Coming up, we've got State Senator Karen McConaughey, Republican from St. Charles, as we continue our Springfield Road Show, the Sunday Spin on the Road.
Now, the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson, and I'm joined here with Amanda Vinicky, the Illinois Public Radio State House Bureau Chief, as we've taken the Sunday Spin on the road to broadcast from the beautiful basement press room here at the Illinois State House in Springfield. This is the last scheduled day of the spring session, and I emphasize the word scheduled. I just want to let you know I was out on the remote WGN Storm Center patio here at the Illinois State Capitol, where it's going to be an overcast day and windy, and my friend Brian Bernadoni, who is leading tours out at Wrigley, mentions that Lake Michigan is choppy and angry.
Mm.
So
let the metaphors fly.
Exactly. You know, it's kind of like yesterday here at the State House, and it rained all day here in Springfield. And a friend of mine, Doug Finke from the State Journal Register, we were standing out on the north portico here of the State House, and I turned to Doug and I said, "What a miserable day." And his response was, "Inside or outside the building?" Perfect metaphor. Well, joining Amanda and I here in the WUISFM State House Bureau is State Senator Karen McConaughey, Republican of St. Charles, serving her second term as Senator of the 33rd District, Republican spokesperson, I'd still say spokeswoman, I'm sorry, for the State Senate Transportation and Commerce and Economic Development Committees. Senator, it's good to have you here, and I'm sorry it's taken so long for your inaugural debut on the Sunday Spin.
Well, I am thrilled to be here, especially since it's your first road trip.
That's right, and we've got future road trip plans, depending on what the engineers say. So, and I want to thank Engineer Greg, too, from WUISFM, who's here, down here in Springfield. Engineer Bob up there. We've got more engineers than I think Amtrak has working at this hour right now. So we're all trying to keep the train that is WGN AM on the tracks today. Senator, I wanted to have you on to kind of get your take here. As I said, it's the last scheduled day, but we all know that this is going into what I think is going to be an extended overtime session. We've got, I think really what comes down to it is a test of wills in many respects between two of the most powerful politicians in Illinois right now, a new governor, Bruce Rauner, Republican, and of course, veteran House Speaker Michael Madigan. What's the game plan going into today? I mean, no one expects that there's going to be a mega deal cut. How do you see today playing out, and then what happens after that?
Well, I think the honest answer there is we're not really quite sure how today will play out. I think you're correct when you suggest that there will be no final solution here, no grand
deal.
No mega deal today. There's not enough time for that. But I think what we hope for, and we should all hope for this, is that all interested parties some indication that everybody wants to keep working at this. Because if there's a complete breakdown today of communication where everybody goes to their respective corners, the people of Illinois are going to suffer from that. So we really need to walk out of here today with at least some indication from all parties that we're going to continue to work on this throughout the summer.
Do you think it's a good thing, frankly, given how in recent weeks, recent days, we've seen everybody kind of getting more entrenched in their positions, to just kind of let's take a time out, as it were, and for people to just get away for a little bit?
Yeah, I think with where we're, a snapshot of where we are this morning, this Sunday morning, with less than 24 hours left to go, tensions, things are tense here. There's no question about that. So probably a little bit of a break is not a bad idea. A little thawing of the situation to allow the leaders to come back and restart conversations with the governor.
But what will change after today that will help a compromise going forward, particularly if, as is expected, the governor sets forth this deluge of ads against the Democratic Party and its leaders and legislators. How is that going to bring people together? Wouldn't that make things even more icy?
Well, one thing I would point out is that I think many have observed that with all the respect in the world to my colleagues on the other side of the aisle, there is this almost a sense that nothing has changed. Everything has changed here. And Tom Cross, I think earlier when he was on, did a good job of laying out what the differences are. Now it's, you know, supermajority control by one party. Now we have a Republican governor. We have a more level playing field. But we also have a governor who has the financial resources to get his message out. This is a guy who campaigned on a very clear, succinct message and agenda that he promised the people of Illinois he was going to deliver on. You'd be hard-pressed to find anybody disagree that he has remained consistent with what it is he promised the people of Illinois. That's how he got elected.
Although I would say, I mean, we saw the stridency against public employee unions in the primary. That went away vastly in the general. And then seem to become
almost like different masks were going on and off this governor. So not a consistent message.
Well,
right?
You know what? No, I think that the people of Illinois saw here's a guy who recognizes that that people and businesses are leaving this state in droves because of the bad economic situation and forecast. The policies of the state are not conducive to creating more jobs. There's a lot of problems in this state.
And they want to change.
They want to
really
change. So whether or not they heard one message in the primary, a different one in the general election, one thing's clear. People want reform. They want change in this state. And Bruce Rauner told people of Illinois, you vote for me, you're going to get change. So now he comes to the state capitol where things have been run by one party for long time. So it's a complete shift in how we think for all parties involved, for the Republicans, for the Democrats, for us. Think about what it is for the Republicans. In the past, all we had to do is throw bombs over the transom and because we were against the policies of the Democrats. Now we have to be part of the solution.
And truly, that is a significant change. And I mean, I'm not trying to adopt a Democratic line here, but you guys are part of the game now where it was easy. And even as Tom Cross said earlier, it was just easy to be able to vote no on things, and it's easier to vote no than it is to vote for the hard things.
Absolutely. So in terms of what's going to happen, what's going to change this summer, I think you're going to continue to see the governor take his message back to the people who elected him and say, hey, I'm ready to go to work. I've been at the Capitol. I've been putting my ideas on the table, and I need the Democrats to meet me halfway. I think that's what he's going to talk about all summer, and I think it's going to be up to the other side to decide whether or not they want to engage in that.
We're speaking with State Senator Kieran McConaughey, Republican from St. Charles, Amanda Vinicky from WUIS-FM and Illinois Public Radio here. I'm Rick Pearson. The Sunday Spin on the road from Springfield continues right after this. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin as we're all celebrating the Blackhawks' victory last night and they're returning to the Stanley Cup Finals. I'm Rick Pearson. The Sunday Spin is on the road in Springfield, Illinois, broadcasting from the luxurious basement studios of WUIS-FM and Illinois Public Radio. And joining me here in studio is Amanda Vinicky, the Illinois Public Radio State House Bureau Chief. And we're also joined by State Senator Kieran McConaughey, Republican from St. Charles. This is supposed to be the day that all the business of the people gets wrapped up here in Springfield. This is the day that all the business of the people will not get wrapped up in Springfield. And Senator McConaughey is giving us kind of the Republican viewpoint of what's going on. And before the break, we had talked about the idea of legislators returning home. And, you know, this is a bubble. You know, people talk in Washington about inside the Beltway. Springfield, it's a bubble. Even when you leave the State House, it's a company town. You know, going home gives everybody, I think, a dose of reality. But that having been said, you know, I've been through extended overtime sessions before, 3 weeks in the case of Jim Edgar in his first year as governor with Mike Madigan. I'll never forget the adjournment date was July 19th because that's also my eldest daughter's, that was her first birthday. So I left the Capitol after midnight. And then, yes, go ahead to go mow the lawn and get ready for a first birthday party, okay? So I remember those kinds of tests of wills. But I do wonder, though, does the average person really know enough to care, especially at this point? Because I think for most people, their interaction with state government is whether they can get their driver's license renewed. Senator?
Yeah, you know, yeah, I think that's very true. But I don't underestimate the people of Illinois' understanding of the economic fiscal situation of the state. I'm amazed at how many people, you know, that you run into in a grocery store who have caught on to the fact that we have the worst economic situation in government. By the way, not just in the state, but in the city of Chicago, anywhere in the country, and that people are thinking twice about whether or not they want to continue to live in Illinois. Businesses are thinking twice about whether or not they want to stay in Illinois or even think about coming to Illinois. People are much more aware of that than we realize. And they're getting impatient. They're getting very impatient with a General Assembly that can't seem to get its act together.
But is it to the point that they attach that as Democrats in a Democratic majority, or is it just a pox on everybody's house?
Unfortunately, it probably is a pox on everybody's house, but I think that's one of the reasons why going home right now is a really good idea. You know, for the first time in a while, Republicans get to go home with some very solid ideas to put on the table. The governor has made his agenda very clear. We support his agenda. We get an opportunity now to go back and talk about that. Back home and really test whether or not we're moving in the right direction, not just for us as Republicans, but also for Democrats.
Now, there's been a lot of back and forth on the issue of, you know, these working groups and was there compromise and did Democrats
enough
leave
time.
The table and all that kind of thing. And I know you had a bill involving various I don't use the word reform because I think that's a term that's an eye in the beholder. I understand politicians that use it. But it did have some changes involving, you know, job guarantees and protections.
Right.
It was basically the outcome of some of those issues at the Illinois Department of Transportation.
Right.
And that's not moving anywhere.
No, because it's all caught up in the quest for the grand bargain. You know, that had to do with there's been 20 years of, you know, again, typical of the reputation Illinois has. There's been an ongoing lawsuit to deal with the practices of past administrations, political hiring. Right, political cronies, that kind of thing. So we're trying to get a bill through to end that. You know, there's two pending lawsuits that the state's going to have to eventually deal with. But it's an example of the thing of something, an important reform, and we use that. Yeah, with that word, but it's something that has to be done. But you're not going to get it done because we're all in deadlock. Here's the one thing I'll say about the working groups and the other efforts. You don't have to agree with everything that the governor has put on the table, and we don't. No one in this building is exactly on the same page on every issue. But I got to tell you that he has been willing to talk. He's been willing to compromise. In fact, he has compromised. When was the last time I talked about right-to-work zones? I mean, the governor has to be given a lot of credit for putting his ideas on the table, listening to the pushback, and recalibrating his direction to reflect the voice of the General Assembly. I think he's reaching out and saying, I'm here. Let's work together.
Are we going to see all of those brought back? Is right to work going to once again be part of the discussion, given that there's been no deal? We've heard from the governor, midnight today is the deadline for something, but we haven't heard really from him. Okay, what comes after that?
No, that's true, and you know that's a question best posed to the governor.
Correct.
But I would say that's what's unfortunate and frustrating about the situation we find ourselves in today. All bets are off. That's not a good place to kick off summer.
No, the governor had said he was not calling special sessions, and frankly, I don't expect that we're actually going to gavel to adjournment at all, it's going to be gavel to the call of the chair, because there are so many outstanding issues, from the fact of a budget that the governor proposed that was $2.2 billion hole in it, to the Democratic passed budget, which has a $4 billion. depending on the numbers, yes, but those holes have to be filled. And
well, in the meantime, all these groups are waiting with a whole bunch of uncertainty. I mean, you have schools that need to figure out how many people they're hiring, and agencies that are trying to make their own budgets,
municipalities are being threatened with cuts as well.
But remember what is it that we're going to have to tell people when we leave here? The Democrats passed, without any Republican support, passed a budget that is $4 billion in the hole. Now, where do we go from there? I mean, that's the reality of what we're facing. That's what the Democrats – remember, super control, largest supermajority of any legislative body in the entire country. They pass a budget with not a single Republican vote on it that just isn't balanced. So what do we tell our school districts? What do we tell our social service providers?
What are you telling them?
I think the message that I'm telling them is you need to talk to other members of the General Assembly on the other side of the aisle who have not understood that this governor and the Republicans in the General Assembly are not going to agree to an unbalanced budget. They're simply not going to do it. So we want to place your issues in high priority. They're important. We need to make sure these things get done. We need to make sure the kids get to school. But we've got a responsibility here to rein in how we do business. We have to change. What is the future for this state? And again, I'll say it, the city of Chicago. What is going to happen to Chicago and the state of Illinois moving forward? Where are the jobs going to come from? Where is the new business startups going to come from if we continue on the same old path we've always been on?
Senator Karen McConaughey, Republican from St. Charles, second-term Republican. Thank you so much for getting up this morning and joining us on our inaugural cruise of the Sunday Spin Roadshow. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good to be here.
You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. Coming up on the Sunday Spin, House Speaker Illinois Michael Madigan.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson in On the Road with the Sunday Spin in Springfield, Illinois. Today, the last scheduled day of the spring session, but no one, of course, is expecting it to be the final day. I'm broadcasting from WUIS-FM State House Bureau here in the State Capitol Building. I'm joined by Amanda Vinicky, the Illinois Public Radio State House Bureau Chief, and joining us also in studio, Illinois House Speaker Michael J. Madigan. Mr. Speaker, thank you for joining the show.
Good morning.
Okay, so what are we in for today?
Today there will be a session of the House, a session of the Senate. We will continue to work on the issues before the legislature. Today will be like every day of this session. At the very beginning, I pledged to Governor Rauner to work with the governor cooperatively and professionally, and I will continue that pledge. I think the number one issue before the legislature and before the state government is the budget deficit. I've said from the beginning, you cannot simply cut your way out of the budget deficit. You need a balanced approach. You need cuts, and you need new revenue. The legislature will send to the governor a bill that will cut Medicaid spending by over $400 million. In addition, there are cuts all through the budget. As an example, higher education will be cut by close to 3%. The administrative agencies will be cut by a significant amount of money. We have advanced a spending plan to the governor. And the spending plan that I support would help and protect middle-class families by supporting local schools, local police, local roads and streets. The governor has advanced certain non-budget issues where he's attempting to leverage his non-budget issues against the elimination of the deficit. The governor's non-budget issues, in my judgment, go right to the core beliefs of both Democrats and Republicans, because the governor's non-budget issues would reduce wages and the standard of living of middle-class families. It would force injured workers to go on welfare or go to the emergency room, and it would take the budget making and the elimination of the deficit to the extreme. The solution to any differences between the governor and the legislature concerning the elimination of the deficit will happen in moderation. It will not happen in the extreme. Everybody has to be reasonable about this. And again, to the extent that you take this to the extreme, you're not helping the situation.
Well, I mean, you've said in other interviews, and basically you're saying the governor is being an extremist on these, what you say, non-budgetary issues, particularly issues involving organized labor. That's your contention.
Well, just the other day, the governor said that his two main issues would be changes in workers' compensation and real estate taxes. And workers' compensation affects all workers, whether they're unionized or whether they're not unionized. And to the extent that you bring down the benefit level in workers' compensation, you're bringing down the standard of living of people who work for a living. And if they're injured and they don't get sufficient compensation from the workers' compensation system, they're going to wind up on welfare or they're going to wind up at the emergency room.
What about as far as the property tax freeze? And there does seem to be some incongruity here because the governor had talked about wanting to make cuts in the state share of income taxes that go to local governments. You have talked about the issue of a cost shift involving teacher pensions onto local school districts. And then you also then are thrown on the table is this issue, always a popular sounding one, of a property tax freeze. Right.
As I said, in the spending plan that I support, it would help and protect middle-class families by providing support for local schools, local police, local roads, and bridges. At the same time that I'm advancing that spending plan, the governor is talking in terms of reducing the level of support for local schools, local police, local roads, and bridges. And in addition to that, he wants to freeze the real estate taxes. We called the governor's plan for freezing real estate taxes in the House of Representatives. 37 people voted for the bill, all Democrats. No Republicans voted for the bill. Republicans might come back and say, that was a sham vote. Well, it was a real vote. Had there been 60 people voting for that bill, it went over to the Senate, and the Senate could have considered the bill.
So you were part of the meeting with the governor the other day on Thursday, or Friday, the four tops meeting, as we refer to it, with the governor. And everybody came out saying, well, you know, yes, we have to work to compromise. We have to work to find agreement. Yeah. Are you just saying flat out that aside from the budget, you don't believe these other items should be negotiated as part of an overall end of session type agreement?
I'm prepared to work on all of the issues that are before the legislature, including workers' compensation and including real estate taxes. I would repeat, to the extent that these non-budget issues take the elimination of the deficit to the extreme, it doesn't help the solution. The solution to the elimination of the budget deficit will be in moderation. And please, again, number one problem afflicting the state of Illinois is the budget deficit.
You know, Speaker, the governor's office has said, however, that coming out of that meeting, they felt like your statements or your office's statements broadly were a sign that you weren't willing to cooperate, that you weren't willing to go along. And they point to, as evidence, this session that other than, you know, passing a budget, none of these major issues have advanced either as Rauner initially presented them or in any other fashion. There has been no compromise, no change that the voters of Illinois want.
The governor has certain ideas about changes that ought to happen in areas like workers' compensation. And he of course, he's entitled to his views. There are other views. And as I said before, to the extent that you bring down the benefit level in workers' compensation, you're hurting middle-class families because you're reducing their standard of living and you're forcing injured workers to welfare or to the emergency room.
Is there some way to move? I mean, there's been an issue about whether there has been savings in those reforms that were adopted, those changes that were adopted, I believe, in 2011, but that there's some question of whether it's being passed along by the insurers.
That's a point of difference between people in the legislature and the governor. And so for those who were around the changes of 2011, they feel that pursuant to recommendations from a national rating agency, the insurance company should have reduced their premiums, which they haven't done. And so if you want to have a broad-based approach to changes in workers' compensation, it should include whether the insurance companies are being fair about this and whether they should reduce their premiums.
Speaker, there are those who say that the state of Illinois, again, demands change because it's in a sorry state. The governor himself had made some pretty outward statements on that along the campaign trail about a death spiral that the state is on. Do you buy that Illinois needs any sort of drastic changes? And if so, are you responsible? You've been the speaker for, what, 30 of the last 32 years. Do you bear the weight of that?
The number one problem afflicting the government of the state of Illinois is the budget deficit and the accumulated debt. That's why the focus should be on the elimination of the deficit. Eliminating the deficit is going to happen in moderation. It's not going to happen in the extreme. People will want to bring non-budget issues to this debate. They'll be able to do it to the extent that they do it on the extreme, which I think Governor Rauner is doing. They're not solving the problem. The solution to the budget deficit problem will be in moderation.
But certainly the governor has made it clear, and you know about the money that he has out there that's aimed directly at your back. And you saw that during the campaign against Governor Quinn, when you were lumped in as part of the corrupt Illinois government that exists. But do you, critics will say, don't you bear some culpability for where we are today by virtue of your role with Republican governors and Democratic governors in past budgetary practices, including pensions?
To the governor's plans on advertising, again, to the extent that the advertising takes this debate and this discussion to the extreme, it doesn't help to eliminate the budget deficit, which is the number one problem facing the state of Illinois. The solution to the budget deficit will be in moderation, everybody being reasonable. To the extent that you take this to the extreme, you get into name-calling, not at all related to the budget deficit, you hurt the solution, you don't help the solution.
We're speaking with Illinois House Speaker Michael J. Madigan, Amanda Vinicky from Illinois Public Radio. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. The Sunday Spin on the road in Springfield. Today, the last scheduled day of the Illinois Legislature's spring session, and of course, scheduled has quote marks around it because I envision that we're going to be extending the session quite a bit here for quite some time. I'm joined here in the State House Bureau of WUIS-FM and Illinois Public Radio in Springfield by Amanda Vinicky, Illinois Public Radio State House Bureau Chief, and our guest, Illinois House Speaker Michael J. Madigan. Speaker, we touched on the fact that, you know, you've dealt with Republican governors in the past before. I remember 1991 and Jim Edgar, and there was kind of a test of wills going on there. This time around, you know, I view it as here's a new governor. Even with Jim Edgar, you know, we kind of knew a political history from him. Here's a new governor holding his first ever public office, has vowed to change Springfield, but also has that factor of wealth behind him. You know, that's a new dynamic that hasn't been present before. And I'm wondering, you know, you say, of course, if there's a TV ad campaign of name-calling and that's not helpful to the process. Mm-hmm. But do you think it's something that can be effective of this governor with money to put behind a bully pulpit? How does that change the dynamic for Democrats politically in this state, if at all?
It's a new element of consideration. We've thought about it. We've planned for it. We're not going to move away from our belief that the governor's non-budget issues will hurt the middle-class families of Illinois.
So it's the economic playbook. We kind of saw that in the gubernatorial campaign. Correct?
Every member of the General Assembly was elected based upon a campaign in their district. For the Democrats, they were elected by middle-class families of Illinois, and they're not prepared to walk away from those middle-class families. That's why we have a spending plan that helps and protects middle-class families by supporting their local schools, by supporting their local police departments, and supporting their local roads and streets through spending by the state of Illinois for those local concerns.
Are you ramping up your own fundraising efforts, or have you found it maybe easier to fundraise with Democratic constituencies given what has come out of Rauner with his own agenda? Maybe are you even changing it? You're known for ground game operations. Yeah. Are you going to be moving to, say, social media or your own TV ads?
For the last several weeks, I've been focused on the issues before the General Assembly. And as I said before, the number one issue before the legislature is the budget deficit.
But to fight that, what are you doing?
I'm advancing a spending plan that helps and protects middle-class families by supporting their local schools, their local police, their local roads and streets. That's what I'm committed to. Now, the governor apparently is spending time on fundraising and dispersing funds. I'm not doing that. I'm focused on these issues before the General Assembly, eliminating the budget deficit. And again, elimination of the budget deficit has to be a balanced approach. There must be cuts. There has to be some new revenue. We've already passed a bill that would save $400 million in the Medicaid program. This is not the only spending plan before the General Assembly. The governor filed the spending plan. It has a deficit. It has a budget gap, a revenue gap in his proposal. And what he did was to file a budget which was predicated upon the spending of an anticipated savings of $2 billion in pension savings when he never filed the bill. It's incredible that there hasn't been more reporting on something like this. A governor of a state files a budget. The budget presumes spending $2 billion in savings from a pension proposal, and he never filed the bill.
So where do we go next with this? I mean,
how does
really,
it end?
What is the end game? Or should I just pitch a tent?
I know you're
going to
be surprised when I say that the end game is in moderation.
And I'm really thinking if we tax the word moderation, we might actually get out of this budget mess. But I mean, but seriously, you have a governor who says, I'll look at revenue, but it has to be coupled with what you call these non-budgetary issues.
Yes.
I mean, obviously, that's his linkage. You're rejecting that linkage.
I'm rejecting that linkage when it's in the extreme. So let's be clear. I'm prepared to work with the governor. I pledged to him in January that I would work with him cooperatively.
So what you're seeing right now, you contend is extreme.
I'll continue to do that. But I would say again, number one problem is the deficit. Elimination of the deficit will happen in moderation, not on the extreme.
So what we have is a governor who says, and the Republicans saying, no revenue without their word reform. And what you're saying is revenue, and then we'll consider, quote, reform. Is that a fair characterization?
No, I don't think it's a fair characterization. I'm prepared to work with everybody in the legislature and the governor to solve all of the issues before the legislature and before the Illinois government.
But you're saying the number one issue is the budget deficit.
I stand on that. The number one issue is the budget deficit.
So you know, one of your top lieutenants has said that he feels as if the governor is acting like Blagojevich, trying to tell the legislature what to you. Do you agree with that? Or how do you eventually move to a compromise given the situation that we're in now?
Well, I would be concerned if Mr. Rauner does start to act like Blagojevich. The governor, one or two days ago, said that he was not going to call special sessions because that would appear to be like Blagojevich. It is true that there have been certain actions taken by Governor Rauner which clearly look like the things that were done by Rod Blagojevich when he was in office, and I just don't think Illinois needs Rod Blagojevich.
What type of things?
In negotiating positions and statements in these working groups that were set up by the governor. There was a clear resemblance to the Blagojevich tactics, and I know that Governor Rauner is concerned about that. You know, he has said he does not want to be viewed as another Blagojevich.
I want to ask you one thing that's kind of been a question that's been perplexing a number of people this session is your decision not really to vote on legislation. Mm-hmm. What should anybody make of that, particularly, you know, in the past when you've been critical, just even more recently, of Republicans voting present on bills that, you know, you say are real?
I think if you would review my voting record over the entire session, you'll find that I'm a very active voter on the bills, and you can check the last few days. So sometimes I don't vote on a bill simply because I don't feel comfortable that I have enough knowledge about the bill to vote on the bill.
You're the Speaker of the House. You're the only guy in this building that reads every bill.
Yeah, but I'm busy talking to people like you.
Well, I'm sorry. Let's be honest. This is a rare occasion.
Yeah.
I mean,
now listen. Before we end this, let's not forget about the accomplishments that will come out of this session of the General Assembly. So, number one, Illinois will be a first in the nation in terms of police reforms. We've already passed a bill out of the House which responds to the events that happened in Ferguson, Missouri, and in New York City. The bill would prohibit chokeholds. It would mandate body cameras being used by the police. In addition, we have completely reformed the 911 system statewide. The 911 system statewide is basically broke and broken, and the bill completely reforms the system, mandates that every locality in the state have a 911 system. Where the localities are poor, money is provided to help them install a 911 system. So there will be accomplishments coming out of this General Assembly that have already happened. Police reform and reform of the 911 system.
Very quickly, where are we as far as the Chicago agenda? I know that the pension bill for police fire has advanced. Is there anything pending for CPS, which Republicans are looking at June 30th as kind of a pressure date on Democrats, as well as a Chicago casino?
Yeah, I think you've made a good point that in case of the financial burden on the city of Chicago relative to their obligations to the Chicago police and fire pension systems, we did pass a bill yesterday, and I think the Senate will pass the bill today, that will provide relief for the city of Chicago. It will restructure the payment schedule, put those systems and the city on what's called an arc in due time so that there will be more financial security and stability for the police and the fire pension systems.
What about CPS?
CPS is not currently active before the General Assembly. We're all familiar with the financial problems of the Chicago school system. They get to be terribly complicated. We're prepared to be helpful to solve those problems.
But there's nothing?
Nothing currently active.
And then the casino that the mayor has talked about is for dedicating revenue to pension.
In that proposal for a casino in Chicago is before the legislature. Today it's not active, but it's before the legislature.
Illinois House Speaker Michael J. Madigan, thank you very much for joining me this morning on the Sunday Spin.
Go Blackhawks.
We'll be back with more right after this. Well, that's all we have time for on today's Sunday Spin. I want to thank my guest, Tom Cross, former Illinois House Republican leader, State Senator Karen McConaughey, Republican from St. Charles, and Illinois House Speaker Michael J. Madigan. I also want to thank all the fine folks here at WUIS-FM for their help as we took the Sunday Spin on the road to Springfield, and to my special co-host today, Amanda Vinicky. Thank you, Amanda.
It has been my pleasure, my end-of-session pleasure.
And I want to thank you all for listening. And, Dean, looking forward to your show.
Look at you with the show on the road.
Well, it seemed that the appropriate thing to do.
It was fantastic.
And not a bad guest list.
I would say that you got the State of Illinois A-list of A-listers today.
Well,
that's what his voice sounds like.
Coming from you. That's right. That's right.
Wow.
Well, that's why I particularly enjoyed where he was explaining he was too busy talking to the media. Which, yeah.
You know what? Once every 25 years, whether he needs to or not.
Well,
he's actually been available a few times lately.
But
it is sporadic. Let's be clear. That is not what he's too busy doing.
He is known as the Sphinx.
Yeah.
Okay.
He is
very reserved with his words. And to appear on a live radio show, I mean, it's one thing to, you know, throw some sound bites on where, you know, things get tough. You can walk away.
Although he had his talking points, I think it was very evident.
Yeah,
yes.
But you both did a fantastic job. That was great.
Well, thank you very much, Dean. And I'm sure you're already starting your show as the Blackhawks pregame for Wednesday.
You think there's going to be any hype for that at
all? Not at WGN. Of course not.
Well, let's get the hype started then.
I'm all for it.